Welcome to Special Sauce, Serious Eats podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike.
There's like never an end to the story with pizza. It's never, when somebody says, oh, such and such place is hands down the best ever, nobody ever says, oh, okay, cool, thanks. You want to go play some hockey?
Pizza. What makes it so interesting?
Have you eaten it? Come on. How else are you going to answer it? Have you not eaten pizza?
This week, we are talking with two people who might know, actually, they do know more about the most democratic food we have, pizza, than anyone else on the planet. Adam Kuban is the founding editor of the seminal food blog Slice.com, which Serious Eats acquired right before we launched in December of 2006. As part of the deal, Adam became Serious Eats' first managing editor. Margo's Pizza, his monthly pizza pop-up in Brooklyn, sells out within seconds of the tickets going on sale online. His fellow pizza enthusiast, and actually I would say scholar, Scott Wiener, is the founder of Scott's Pizza Tours, the author of Viva la Pizza, The Art of the Pizza Box, and is in the Guinness Book of World Records for having the largest collection of pizza boxes on the planet. Welcome to Special Sauce, my fellow pizza enthusiasts. It's so rare for the three of us to be sitting around a table without being surrounded by pizza boxes.
That's true. Although we did have a slice right before we walked into the room,
true.
I gotta be honest.
But, you know, it's okay. Yeah, and that was a terrific slice, right? From Corner Slice, which is a place we all love on 45th and 11th Avenue, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
We can geek out for like 5 hours, but we only have a couple. So I'm gonna start with you, Scott. Tell us about your path to pizza. Where and when did it start?
Well, it probably started the same way that most people's path starts, which is just that pizza is delicious. You know, I mean, like, people ask me this question all the time, and I'm like, well, you probably understand that, like, I got into it because I want to eat pizza every day. It's basically how it is. But, you know, it shifted from a food that I liked to a subject matter that I liked. Actually, I'm not making this up. It was when I read A Slice of Heaven.
Oh, because, you say the nicest things.
Seriously, I read A Slice of Heaven. I found out that there were books that treated pizza as a cultural element. And when I realized that it was something more than just a food and that I could sort of dig into the history and the science of it, then I got more excited about it. And that is actually what led me to things like Adam's blog Slice, which I became totally obsessed with, even though I was living in a place that had no internet. I had to go across the street to sit in the lobby of a building and steal internet to read that website. And, you know, and that just got me into going on little pizza adventures with my friends.
You know, I watched the documentary about you, and you actually were a musician at one point on the road keeping a pizza diary. Okay,
yes.
That's a little weird. Can we say that? Adam, would you say that that's a little weird even for us?
No. I totally get it.
I used to keep a little diary. My friend Michelle made me this little book that, you know, like when we were on tour pre-blogging times, really, like early 2000s, you know, people would keep a little diary of, you know, what was going on the tour that day because there's not much to do when you're sitting in the car for 12 hours. And my diary was just all about pizza. So every day it was, where did we go for pizza? Who were we with? Did we meet up with somebody from the venue? How much did it cost? What did we eat? How was it? And that's, you know.
Adam, how did you get into pizza?
I don't have as eloquent a story as Scott does. I just kind of, well, it's kind of similar to Scott's. I just liked eating pizza. Basically, when I was a kid, my dad was really into pizza. And I grew up in Kansas City, but my family originally came from Milwaukee, and my dad missed a pizzeria there.
A famous one that you turned me on to, Maria's.
I don't know if it's famous. It's famous now because I blab about it all the time on the internet.
And I wrote about it. I think we wrote about it all the time on Serious Eats.
Oh, yeah, we
did. And in the Serious Eats book.
Yeah. Yeah. He wanted to recreate Maria's Pizza in Kansas City, where we eventually moved to and where I grew up. And he would try to experiment in the home oven with, you know, like the unglazed quarry tiles, making pizza in there. And eventually he opened a pizzeria in Olathe, Kansas, where I grew up, Mamma Mia's. It's kind of goofy, but...
And how long did it last?
It lasted about a year.
Oh, that must have been tragic.
Yeah, the Pizza Hut came in across the street and kind of...
Wow, that's a quintessentially American story.
Yeah, the Olathians. I think it's all transplants. They didn't really know anything. It was like, sure. Oh, Pizza Hut. We know that from where we came from. Let's go there.
And I'm sure your dad could not compete on price.
Yeah, probably not.
But that just seemed to whet your appetite. It didn't really discourage you from taking an interest in pizza.
No, not at all. Once I got the bug, I started making pizza at home. Once I went off to college, because we used to do, when I was growing up, we would do pizza nights. Like Friday night was pizza night. We would make homemade pizza. I wish I could say it was as artisanal as making our own dough and cold fermenting it for 3 days, because I would have had a huge head start on my pizza knowledge. I think by the time we started doing pizza nights after the Mamma Mia's thing was... we were doing Chef Boyardee box mixes. I don't know if my dad was just like, ah, forget it, the box mix here. But they were actually kind of good. You throw enough of that parm, that Kraft parm that comes on there, it's good.
We all know that even bad pizza is pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, and who knows whether maybe it was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But then you got to college. You went to University of Kansas, right?
Yeah, I went to the University of Kansas. There I started making pizza at home. All right. Once I got out of the dorms, I started doing pizza a couple times a month, doing little pizza parties and such.
You went to the journalism school or undergraduate?
Undergraduate of journalism. By way of the pharmacy school, which organic chemistry
which helps in the pizza making. I didn't know that.
I think it helps in the pizza making and just cooking in general. I mean, if you go by what Kenji says, it's kind of like scientific. I think it gives you a method, or it gives you a good foundation in trying things, experimenting, noting what worked, what didn't, and then trying new things.
I didn't even know that. So then, and then you had a bunch of journalism jobs, and then you found yourself in New York.
Yeah.
Right. And you were the copy chief at Martha Stewart Living.
Yeah, I was a copy editor.
I
was a copy chief eventually at their website once they finally decided to go online in a big way.
And that's when you started what Scott and I were reading, Slice.com.
Yes, it was actually SliceNY.com.
SliceNY, that's right. You couldn't
guess
Slice.com.
You could still type that in at home. It'll forward you to Serious Eats / pizza now.
So tell us about that.
Basically, I started Slice. I moved to New York in 2000, the year 2000.
Is that a Conan reference?
Yes, of course. You can never say the year 2000. I came here in 2000. I was a huge pizza freak already. I already had the idea for doing Slice. When I was in Portland, I moved here from Portland, Oregon, where I'd lived for about 3 years. There, zines were a huge thing.
Zines. Remember zines?
Oh, yeah.
They were from before 2000.
Oh, yeah. It was the dream of the 90s the 90s. Yeah. So, yeah, I was there from like 97 to 2000.
Starting the blog as much because you were lonely. You didn't know that many people in New York.
It was a little bit of being, it was loneliness. And just not feeling like I fit in New York, I think. So I'd always wanted to do Slice as like a zine, and I even had prototyped it and mocked it up as like a little square format photocopied zine. It was supposed to be square to like reference a pizza box. But I put that on the shelf because I was like, who's going to go and pick up a zine and how are you going to distribute it? But then when I saw blogs come up in like 2003, it's like, oh, this is great. I want to do a blog. But I didn't put two and two together and say, oh, I'll do Slice as a blog. I tried to write in a really lousy personal blog and then scrapped it. And then after a while, I was like, oh, wait, yeah, Slice, blog, boom. So, yeah, it was there that I decided I'd put that online. I had been clipping things from magazines like New York Magazine, The Times Magazine,
right,
Village Voice.
Right, that's the way we all start writing about food. That's the way I wrote New York Eats in 1991. I just had, like, the world's biggest file full of clippings.
Yeah, I had a file of clippings. I had links from, I think, Ed's 2002. What was the State of the Slice?
State of the Slice was 2002.
So I had
in
that
the New York
saved.
Times.
And I was like, oh, on this blog, I can like, I can put up all my links to all like these seminal articles. I had like a little list of things like 2002 State of the Slice, fat-guy.com's pizza guide. Fat Guy was Stephen Shaw,
right,
who was one of the founders of Chowhound.
Right. The late Stephen
Shaw. No, not Chowhound.
E-Gullet.
E-Gullet.
The late Stephen Shaw, very sadly, passed away a couple of years ago.
Yeah, but he had a fantastic pizza guide at fat-guy.com, and that I squirreled away as like something I wanted to share with people as I went about searching for pizza around New York City, because, I, like I said, I was new here in 2000, and I just wanted to eat all the pizza because this is the epicenter of pizza.
And Scott, were you basing your research on Slice and everything else you read, or were you just taking it upon yourself to try every Slice you could find?
It was kind of from three ways. It was definitely Slice, because then every day I could read a little update about something that was not in my town. And I was living in Hoboken, New Jersey at the time. Slice of Heaven was a good guide. But then like Time Out and New York Magazine were coming out with, not as often as they are now, but they, I remember at one point there was, I think Time Out had something like the 10 oldest pizzerias in New York. And I really liked that because it was so specific. It wasn't just the 10 best. It was something, you know, a piece of information about it. And I remember that was the first time I ever went down a list and I systematically visited pizzerias.
And so you would just start going to pizzerias. You weren't doing anything with the information at that point, right?
Yeah, I was just visiting. I would take my friends so that they could split the gas. And then, you know, we go in, you know, check out Totono's and L&B, or we go to the Bronx or whatever. And then at each one of those places, we'd meet other people who are also checking out multiple spots, or just people waiting. I remember waiting in that line at Totono's, and people told us, oh, you got to go check out this place. I forgot what, but, you know, and then we went there. And it was just, it wasn't a tour. I was telling my friends what I knew and what I had researched the night before, but it wasn't any kind of formal thing at all.
And you had a day job, right, that you hated?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I really hated it, but I
say it wasn't fulfilling.
My former boss just saw the documentary. She called me up after, she goes, you mentioned that you hated a job. Was that when you worked for me? And I was like, no. But no. There was an unfulfilling job where I was working for the city of Hoboken. And it just seemed like at the time I wasn't paying rent. So I didn't really need
now,
the income from the
you,
job.
Wait. Why weren't you paying rent?
It's kind of a convoluted story. But at the time I was living on the only surviving Ellis Island ferry boat. Docked in Hoboken.
I was
this is not in the documentary.
Wait.
When working for Hoboken, for the city of Hoboken, I managed to make my way onto this boat that had just docked in town. It must have been like 2006 or 7 or something like that. And found out that the owners of this boat lived on board and needed a caretaker to live on board and just take care of things while they traveled around. So that's what I did. So for 3 years, I lived on this old ferry boat and didn't pay rent. That's
so cool.
I didn't really have to have that job. So I quit the job.
And was it a comfortable ferry boat to live on?
I mean, looking back now, this is 13 right. years later, I probably would not live on it now.
Of course.
But if I was 24 years old again, hell yeah. It was unbelievable. It was just, I lived on the Hudson River with a direct view of the Statue of Liberty, Statue of Liberty down here, you can kind of see right around the corner, and right across from the Empire State Building.
That's the cheapest apartment with a view ever.
It's all the things is what it is. It had no heat, it had very little electricity, it was spotty, no internet, but, you know, and it was never bored in 3 years.
And so when did you come up with the idea of the tour, and how did, like, was it based on anything else that you encountered, or was it just a product of your feverish imagination?
Well, at the time, I didn't know much about tours. Like, I'd never taken a tour ever. And all I knew is that I was driving around with my friends and going to fun spots. And then I decided for my birthday, I think it was my 26th birthday, I decided to kind of take all my friends who had been begging me to go on one of these little pizza adventures in my little Nissan Sentra. And I was like, you know what? Let's just do it all in one shot. So I rented a bus, like a school bus, and then we just drove around to five or six places in one day on the school bus.
Drinking on the school bus.
We weren't even drinking. We were that was not my crew. We were more in. We just wanted pizza. Adam was there.
Yeah.
Really?
You were there. Yeah, yeah. Adam was there. Yeah, I invited like some people. I'd never met Adam. I don't think I'd met you before.
Yeah, I think that was the first time we met.
Yeah, it was like a bunch of my friends and like a couple of their friends and my parents and my brother was there. And, you know, Adam's there. We met at Franny's at the original location. Yeah. And we
May
just
it rest
drove
in
around.
Peace.
I know, seriously. And yeah, and that was kind of it. And I never thought about doing it as a business until after that when all my friends told me that I should drop my real job and just do it.
And so you did it.
Yeah.
Like you just quit.
Yeah. Yeah. I put in 2 weeks' notice, you know, right around that time. And I did not know that I was going to be doing the pizza tour. All I knew was that I didn't want to do that job. And something like the pizza tour thing was exciting.
You know, because that happened to me. I'd written New York Eats while I had a day job running this company called Fred Allen, and I really found it difficult to be working for these guys who really didn't like the business we were in, which was sort of a combination of advertising agency, production house. And so I just quit, just figuring there had to be a better life out there. And it sounds very similar.
You quit without having another job lined up.
No, my book was coming out. But as people know, most people know, it's like, don't depend on the royalties from your book
but
to make a living.
But did part of you think that like, oh, well, at least I got this in the pipeline. Maybe that'll float me for a bit? Like the smallest part of you.
The advance for that book would float me for weeks. So it was just one of those weird things that, you know, just like I really just thought there has to be a better life out there somewhere.
Yeah.
I had no idea that anyone was going to pay attention to that book. I didn't know anyone in the food world. You know, I'd written New York Eats by going on via Subway to every neighborhood in New York armed with those clippings from every magazine and newspaper. And I would leave with a shopping cart from my house. And I would take the subway and I would just eat my way through every neighborhood. And that's how New York Eats was written while I had a day job. And then when these guys were driving me crazy, it's like, okay, I'm out of here.
Yeah, done.
So it was the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I didn't have anything lined up. And even doing a pizza thing wasn't part of it.
So you knew how to rent a bus.
Yeah.
How did you put the tickets on sale?
Well, so the bus was funny. Like the first time when I did it for my birthday, when Adam was there, it was a friend of mine. Like her father owned some school bus company. So we rented from them. So that's why it was a school bus that time. And then I realized that wasn't a company that I could use forever because there was no air conditioning on the bus. Like all these things that I feel people need to buy a ticket.
Sure.
You got to give them. So I just tracked down school bus companies in New York, which are not owned by the city. They're separate
private
companies.
Yeah.
Yeah, separate companies. And then like along the way, kind of right around the time that I was reading Slice and kind of getting to know all the pizza stuff, I met a guy named Tony Muya, who was running at that point for probably 2 or 3 years, this thing called A Slice of Brooklyn, which is a tour that goes all around Brooklyn and it hits up Grimaldi's and L&B Spumoni Gardens and talk about pizza stuff. They talk about history and like famous movies that were shot around Brooklyn. And he helped me figure out how to do the ticket selling and to get insurance.
Really?
And yeah, like a lot of the stuff about how to run the business of tourism, which I had zero family members that were involved. You know, it was like, I didn't have any family in any of the businesses that I was sort of dabbling in.
Isn't it interesting?
So,
you know, I know when I was starting Serious Eats, I mean, I depended on what's the famous Tennessee Williams line? You depend on the kindness of strangers.
Yeah.
But in my case, it was like I depended on the kindness of strangers and people I'd met once or twice, like Adam.
Right.
You know, and we should talk about, Adam, how you and I met.
Yeah, well, when I was writing Slice, I started Slice in 2003. I met Ed on April 4th, 2004. I remember that date because it's the birthday of one of my founding editors or founding writers, Mark Bayless, a.k.a. Seltzer Boy, was his name on the site. But we used to do, I think I called them Slice meetups, and we would go to various pizzerias, and I just put up on the blog, hey, next weekend we're going to blankety-blank place. This time happened to be Titano's, so we went to Titano's. We're all sitting there. I think it was a group of about 10 to 12 people. And somebody recognized Ed, who was there, I think, writing Slice of Heaven, his book, or he's doing research for it. And somebody's like, hey, that's Ed Levine. He wrote, like, he wrote New York Eats, da-da-da-da-da. He's the guy, he's a food writer. It's like, oh, like, you should go tell him what... Go tell him what we're up to. I was like, no way. It's you, like, so he'll think I'm an idiot.
No,
so.
No, you're the only people that ever recognized me. And so we hung out, I remember, for quite a while at the Tonos until I think Cookie kicked us out because she needed the table.
Yeah.
Which is Cookie's way of showing that she loves you. Yeah. And one of the owners of the Tonos. And then Adam, when I needed a managing editor, Scott, I talked to Adam, and I talked to him once or twice, and once I got my funding, I was like, okay, Adam, like, we're going to do this, and I want to buy Slice, and he also had a hamburger, at a Hamburger Today, which was his burger blog, and it's like, I want to buy, you know, like, I was Mr. Big Shot, right? I was like Mr., you know, like, acquisition freak. And I want you to come on board as my managing editor. And he was like, really? You know, because I guess for you, Adam, it was like, I'm going to make my living doing this?
Yeah, exactly.
You were a little skeptical at first, if I remember.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I was skeptical. Well, because I think when I was doing Slice and a Hamburger Today, like, I knew the little bit of ads I got and the traffic I was getting was enough to... maybe get me a couple $100 a month through an ad network called Blog Ads. And then along with Google, you know, I could run Google ads on the
right,
site.
Right, Google AdSense.
So,
right.
Yeah, so it was like a couple $100 a month. Sometimes, like, around Christmas, it got to be, like, the holidays, it got to be, like, $300 a month. It paid the server fees and it paid some, you know, the cost of eating.
Yeah, so you're going, what's this dude smoking? Like, what does he know that I don't know? And the answer was, I was totally naive. I was just driven by passion, you know, and it was just, I'm going to figure out a way to make this work, you know. And so I just did it. And it's and I was thrilled that you were like, okay, I'm in. And then not only are you a great writer and editor, but you were also a really good coder. Like, you are much more technically savvy than I am.
Yeah, I would say I knew some HTML.
And well, that put you way ahead of me.
I knew some HTML, and I just enjoyed learning what made websites go. Like, today, I would be right there with you today. But, like, back then, I think HTML and building websites was just... it was still within the grasp of maybe, like, hobbyists.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I think that's right. They were hobby blogs. You know, they were called hobby blogs, right?
Yeah.
I just didn't know that they were called hobby blogs. I thought that they could be called businesses, but they were really hobby blogs. But we made the hobby blog into a business, so it's all good. So, yeah. Why pizza, Scott? Why does it hold such fascination to you?
Well, I think for me, it's because it's so wide-reaching. It's just it's the food that's eaten everywhere, and everybody understands it, and it's just sort of an open invitation for conversation. So you could be anywhere and have a disagreement with anybody about anything, but pizza seems to me as the one thing, not religion or politics or anything. Like, you know, talk about pizza, and suddenly you have a real conversation.
It's true, and it's fascinating. It cuts across all class lines, all racial and ethnic lines. It's one of those foods, and I talk about that in Slice of Heaven. It's democratic, and it also, as you both, and we have discussed this, it's the ultimate food to be shared, and that's what encourages conversation and
Absolutely.
Inspires conversation.
Also, I think the fact that there's, like, never an end to the story with pizza. It's never – when somebody says, oh, such and such place is hands down the best ever, nobody ever says, oh, okay, cool, thanks. You want to go play some hockey? Like, no, it's never like that. It's always a conversation, and nobody's ever right and nobody's ever wrong. It's like this friendly thing you can talk about.
It's really funny because Adam – you know, Scott has very generously agrees to do pizza tours with me for this charity dinner I do And what's great is that people, and it's for this great cause, Association of Benefit Children, and people pay $15,000 for Scott and I to run our mouths about pizza and for them to eat four slices of pizza. You know, it's so crazy. But one of the things I noticed is you always start by saying, well, what's your favorite slice? And because I didn't know any better, when somebody would say, artichoke, I was like, are you kidding? You know, I was like, and then Scott was like, no, don't do that, Ed.
Yeah, because I really feel passionately about that. Like, everybody is right about their tastes. And it's like, you know, there's some foods, like if you're talking about barbecue, to an extent, people will say, well, that's not the way that you do that, or that's not the way you do that. And there are these like strict parameters. And with pizza, even though there are factions that have parameters, really overall, it's more like, well, if that's what you're into, then okay. Like, there's no authentic.
And I know that all of us are adherents to what Sam Sifton, the food editor of the New York Times, calls the pizza cognition theory, right? Which holds that the first pizza that you eat, no matter what it is and where it is, becomes in your mind pizza and the paradigmatic slice that you've enjoyed. And everything else that you eat initially after that is not pizza.
Right. It's that's weird. The definition. It creates in your mind what it should be, even though with pizza, the mind is kind of elastic, because I remember the first time I ever had something that had fresh mozzarella on it, which I never grew up with. That, to me, it took the definition and it pulled it a little bit.
Right.
Even
no,
though I'll
no
always
pun
go
intended.
Back. Oh, it's always intended, baby.
So what was your first slice love?
Grimaldi's.
Grimaldi's.
Yeah.
But what about in New Jersey?
Well, New Jersey was Pizza House, a place in Cranford, New Jersey that I grew up with that was like, all my friends kind of agree is not very good, but I loved it because I could walk to it by myself, and it was $1.50 for a slice and a large soda. And I, for some reason, I would roll it from the crust to the tip and eat it like the long way. I don't know why. I never did that with any other slice, but like there was a thing. Like I had there was a relationship I had with the space and with the slice, and it just was a comfort zone.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I'm a little older than you guys. I don't want to say how much, but I used to, the slices in my town were 20 cents, dude. And we used to take our bikes to Far Rockaway, which was in the city, right? We were in Nassau County, but in the town right next to Far Rockaway, because the slices were 15 cents. And I know that neither of you remember the 15 cent slice.
No,
so
no.
What was your first slice love, Adam?
I would say the first pizza I can remember wasn't a slice, because it would have been somewhere in, I don't know, Kansas City, Milwaukee. It all blurs, but I would say it's the thin crust, Chicago thin crust style. I don't know what place it was from.
You don't remember the name of the place?
Nope, because we didn't really eat in. We used to always get it takeout and bring it home.
Got it.
But I would say it's probably something like Maria's, if not Maria's in Milwaukee, but that really thin crust, super crackery, sturdy, thin, shatters when you bite it, loaded with toppings and cheese. So that's pretty much what does it for me.
Adam, what really floats your boat about pizza? What makes it so interesting?
Well, like Scott said earlier, you know, people always ask this, and I say, have you eaten it? Have you? I mean, come on. How else are you going to answer it? Have you not eaten pizza? And if you...
Are you dissing me?
I can't answer it. I just say, it's great.
It's tough because, like, you understand why. Like, people are asking it because when they witness the degree to which you enjoy anything, mm-hmm. and it's something like pizza, then there's just... There has to be something beyond what that other person thinks. And when the truth is like, no, it's exactly what you think. I love pizza. Yeah. I want to eat it every day. Yeah. I want it to be my job.
I remember people were really, when I wrote in the introduction to Slice of Heaven that I ate 1,000 slices of pizza in the year that I wrote the book. And you know, like, are you kidding? It was like, is there something wrong with that? Isn't that your ideal existence? You know, and my son, I would call my home from the road, wherever I was eating pizza, and my son would go, how's the work going with the work in quotes? It's like, he knew, right? Yeah. He was 15, but he knew. It's like, my dad eats pizza for a living, you know? It's like, does it get any better than that?
But, which is an interesting point because, would he brag about that to his friends?
Yeah, a little bit. That'd probably be the only thing he bragged about.
Well, because we talk about this all the time with Adam and with his daughter about how sometimes how she doesn't want to go on pizza adventures with you, mm-hmm. and how you think one day she'll realize what opportunities she missed.
I hope so, but now, like, hearing about Will, she'll maybe I don't have that much hope.
Maybe she'll be rolling her eyes. She'll be like, oh, sad with his pizza.
So
I'm gluten-free.
What's the most common pizza argument you end up getting into or discussion? Not Ooh. Argument. Like, I mean, I have mine, but I'd like to hear yours, both of you.
People always want to know about if it's all in the water. For the
right,
New York
I
slice,
know.
You know, that there's that thing.
Right. And we know Kenji had Matthew Palombino make 5 pizzas with 5 different kinds of water in New York and discovered the water is not the secret.
You know, and I loved that. I loved that experiment, and I love any experiment. But all you have to do is walk down the street and eat any pizza and realize that most of them are not good in New York. And if the water's so damn great, why is there so much crap?
Right. Right.
That's like a big one.
Yeah, that's a big one. For me, it's like the idea that someone orders extra cheese, I regard as a crime against nature.
I personally agree.
Yeah. What about you, Adam?
Well, I've never ordered extra. Well, I have ordered it once, extra cheese. But to answer your original question, I would say people asking, what's the best? What's the best pizza? And I always answer, I kind of ripped it off from Chris Bianco, who runs Pizzeria Bianco in
Phoenix.
Phoenix.
One of the pizza gods. I call him the pizza poet laureate.
Yeah, but I think he says something to the effect of, like, the best pizza is whatever you think is the best pizza. I can't do my imitation.
Great accent.
Now, that's good.
But, yeah.
There'd be some expletives there.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's like the best pizza. Well, A, what I usually actually say is, once one or the other or both, is like, well, what type of pizza? It's like, I never say there's a best. There are several very good pizzas, and it really depends. Like, there's so many styles out there.
Are we talking Neapolitan? Are we talking about whole pies? Are we talking about squares? Are we talking about Detroit style?
Well, you know, I can feel us getting snobbier through this conversation.
No, we're not getting snobby. We're getting discerning. We're not getting snobby. Yeah. So let's talk about your pizza box collection, Scott. You have the Guinness Book of World Records for, and how many pizza boxes do you have now?
Just over 1,400. Why do you have to give me that look?
It's like, you own 1,400 pizza boxes. Now, Adam, we know that Scott's apartment, the boxes are collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're put away. Otherwise, there would be no room for furniture, right?
Yeah.
With 1,400 pizza boxes.
People think that they're all just set up, and I keep telling people that would be my whole apartment.
And
couldn't do that.
And no duplicates, right?
No, there are some duplicates, but I don't have them counted in the collection. I've got a system.
It's so weird.
And, I know it's weird.
Did you regard it as just inherently interesting, as pop art, a sociocultural experiment?
Well, at first it was just more like I thought, well, listen, I'm getting into this world where I'm presenting myself as some sort of a authority on pizza because I'm standing in front of people who are paying money to hear me tell them about the food. And I just figured I have to understand every aspect of it. You know, for every aspect. I got to understand the ovens. I was driving out to Long Island to see pizza oven factories and, like, you know, tomato farms. And I needed to know as much as I could about everything. And so when I started noticing beautiful looking pizza boxes, it was about the art and how interesting it was. And I had all these questions about why go through all the trouble to put this sometimes beautiful art and sometimes absolutely atrocious onto a box that's just going to get thrown in the garbage. You know, because I grew up with, you know, the red, smudgy ink print, one color.
You're so obsessed, Scott, that sometimes on your tours, if you see a box on the sidewalk, you ask the people on the tour – See these smudges? That means there are three slices that were in that box. And that box was manufactured, and the artist was so-and-so. It's crazy.
Well, some of that's a fun game I would just like to play. You know, like, if we're on a tour and we see somebody walk past us holding a slice, I like to turn around to the group and say, I think that they got that from Percy's on Bleecker Street because of the amount of the slice that's been eaten and the distance we are from that place. And, like, you know, like, and I know it's not this, or this place. You know, it's a fun game. And so with the box, in some ways, part of it is I'm trying to nudge people into realizing that there's more detail to something as simple and as obvious as pizza, that there's so much detail about that, then maybe there's way more detail about other things in their life that they are totally discounting. So some of it's like a little bit of a...
Yeah, and but all we should say that all the pizza boxes are empty. There's no
They're all clean.
They're all super clean because you wouldn't want... Mozzarella would get really funky over time, or sausage, or pepperoni.
But people have sent me boxes from other countries that I have no immediate plans of visiting, and they send me these boxes that have had a pizza in them. And what am I going to do, throw it out? And I'm like, no, they emailed me 20 times about sending me the box. I scrape it out. I coat it with some polyurethane. I put it, you know, back in the closet. It's good. I gotta say, it's a clean collection. I feel the judgment.
You know how to clean pizza boxes. You have a method to cleaning pizza boxes. That's so weird. And you've also there's been a traveling exhibition of your pizza boxes, right?
Yeah, we went to London and Berlin and Manchester, and we did something in Brooklyn a couple years ago. So we're trying to go back out. We want to go to Asia. Yeah, I mean, I've got all these great pizza boxes, and we can put them together in any configuration to make an interesting thing go on.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, that's so crazy.
We actually might be having them at this Museum of Pizza pop-up that's happening in October.
Nice. That's so cool. So, Adam, and I know this is true about you too, Scott, one of the ways you guys have raised the pizza obsessive game way beyond me, and I say that with all due respect and admiration, is you're both really good pizza makers now. And Adam, you started a pizza pop-up, Margo's, right? And it sells out, what, Scott? Like, if you wait 45 seconds, it's too late, right?
Oh, yeah. It's impossible.
So you just have to hit...
You got to be right there on the moment.
Right.
Midnight, right?
Yeah, it depends. 10 p.m. now.
So every month...
10 p.m. Mondays.
And talk about the genesis of the pop-up.
Oh, boy. Well, yeah, it's called Margo's Pizza, Margo with a T.
Named after your daughter.
Yeah, named after my daughter. Basically, a few years ago, I was blabbing on the comments in Slice on a post about Pauly G's opening up in Baltimore, in Hampton. And I said, oh, wow, that's really great.
And we should say that Pauly G started as a commenter on Slice,
yes,
and opened up Pauly G's in Greenpoint, which is one of our collective favorite pizzerias.
And if you haven't heard it, he was a guest on this podcast. Go look it up in the archives. Channeling my inner Pauly there.
Yeah.
to give him some light. But yeah, basically in the comments I said, oh, wow, that's really cool what Kelly is doing with this Pauly G's in Baltimore. I've always dreamed of doing something like owning a pizzeria in Portland, Oregon. And then Pauly came on in the comments and said, Slice Meister, talk to me. He used to call me Slice Meister.
He doesn't still call you Slice Meister?
Oh, he does, yeah.
Okay.
But I'm saying, like, yeah. So I emailed him. I was like, what's up? And he's like, let me tell you about this thing. Kelly's not the only one. I'm building this brotherhood of pizza. People like you who have a lot of passion for pizza, who want to do this thing, if they approach me, like, I want to help them out. And, you know, he's basically franchising it.
Yes, he has a very unique style of franchising. He does not take after the McDonald's model.
Yes.
No.
And I know when he's like, I hesitate to call it a franchise. I call it the F word. Yeah. So, but I basically started working at Pauly G's in Brooklyn with the idea of opening a place in Portland. And I was heading that way until I got on this bar pie tangent. And the reason I did that is I wanted to do a pop-up pizzeria. I was inspired by this guy out in San Francisco, Casey Crines, who now runs a place called Casey's Pizza. He was the first pizza truck in San Francisco. He now has the pizza truck and a brick and mortar. But I thought what he was doing at the time, he was doing a pop-up in the back of a bar there. I was like, that sounds really cool. I'd love to do that. So I wanted to do that before I eventually left New York, and I hit upon doing bar-style pizzas.
And we should explain that bar-style pizza is very, very thin crust, sold at bars first in New Jersey, maybe Chicago too.
It's like it's an idea. It's a style that kind of popped up in several places simultaneously. I would say South Shore of Massachusetts has probably the largest geographical concentration of this style. Then there's some in New Jersey. Then there's one in Stamford, Connecticut.
And a few in Chicago, like Vito and... Mm-hmm.
That would be like Chicago thin crust. Right. But they're all like kind of linked.
The key of it all is that I think that they all started popping up in bars
but
in the
40s. But you've taken it to a whole other level. And talk about like what goes into one of your pizzas.
Flour, water, well, the usual stuff, dough, sauce, cheese.
But different kinds of cheese. You don't use just mozzarella.
I use a little bit of cheddar in there in the mix. I have a mix I call Kublend, K-U-B-L-E-N-D. I have a mix of cheese, like a blend of cheese that's kind of inspired by the Jersey Shore. And also it's inspired by Colony Grill in Stamford.
Which is a bar pizza place.
It's a bar pizza place in Stamford, Connecticut. If you look at it, it's got like this kind of pockmarked cheese, and I think it's because they have a lot of cheddar in the mix, the way that cheddar breaks up when it gets hot.
Mm-hmm.
Oils break from the cheese and then start bubbling.
You're bringing it back to your organic chemistry days. You know?
Possibly. I don't know. I barely remember those days, but... Yeah, it's basically it's an amalgam of many different styles throughout the country that I fell in love with. My first love was like basically the Midwestern thin crust pies, so it's got that thinness. I love New York pizza. I love how it's crisp and you can fold it still. So when I went about making my crust, I made sure that it was crisp, but you could fold it.
Kind of oven is it?
Right now we use a wood-fired oven.
Right.
Well, we use like just a standard kitchen oven.
Got it.
Commercial
oven. And that'll work too?
It'll work for the initial bake. We do an initial bake there, and then we finish it in the wood-fired oven at Emily in Clinton Hill, which is my host venue.
Yeah.
I wouldn't use a wood-fired oven for this. Like if I opened commercially or if I opened my own place, I would use just a standard deck oven.
Yeah. So I have one more question for you for this episode, which is if I ordered a pizza, say from Corner Slice, and there were 8 slices, there are 3 of us. How do you figure out who gets 3 and who gets 2?
That's an easy one for me because I have a pretty strict slice limit.
Yeah, and you take this slice limit seriously, right?
I do.
So what is your slice limit?
It's 15 a week.
15 a week?
Yeah. So in that scenario you just painted for us, I'm probably going to have 1 slice.
Right.
And I'm going to let you guys each have 3.
Right.
Wait, that leaves another one. Maybe I'll have 2.
Yeah, you could just cut it one more time into 16.
Well, I try not to have more than 1 slice at a pizzeria per week.
Got it. So. Yes, and you're very, very, very disciplined, I've noticed, when I'm
have
with
to
you.
Be.
Yeah. And you swim every day and
I moved. I moved away from that YMCA, but I bike every day.
Yeah, you bike into Manhattan from Brooklyn, right?
Oh, yeah, from Brooklyn College.
Which is really not close.
No, it's probably about 9 miles from where we are right now. 8 miles.
And what about you, Adam? Like, how would you figure it out? Because you and I could both probably go after that third slice.
Yeah, in my old days, I would have done like 3 or 4 slices. Now I'd probably stop at 2.
Yeah. I think we all learn. You learn the hard way, you know? And I do tell all the serious eaters that the great ones learn to eat with pain.
It's true.
And it is true. So, listen, we have run out of time for this episode of Special Sauce, and we haven't even gotten to where we think pizza is right now and where it's heading in New York and the rest of the country and the world, for that matter. So we're going to keep yapping about pizza because that's what we do, right, when we get together. And thank you both for coming on Special Sauce.
Thanks, Ed.
Thanks for having us.
And we'll see you next time, Serious Eaters.